We're happy to hear argument in our first case, Wells Fargo v. State Farm. Mr. Boyce? Ms. Boyce, sorry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Dawn Boyce. I'm here on behalf of State Farm Fire and Casualty Company and State Farm Mutual Automobile Company with regard to its appeal from a decision in the Eastern District Court of Virginia. Only addressing the facts very briefly, this is a case involving the intentional destruction by fire of two Peterbilt trucks secured under a security agreement with Wells Fargo. That security agreement contained certain restrictions with regard to the mortgagee, in this case that's Miriam Trucking's use of the vehicle. Specifically, the security agreement precluded the sale of the vehicle without the lien holder's permission, required that Wells Miriam Trucking maintain the vehicle in good repair, precluded Miriam Trucking from disposing of the vehicle. And I need to correct, in our brief we cited Appendix 21 for that proposition. That actually appears on page 1 of the security agreement, which is at Appendix 20. And that the insurance obtained to insure the vehicle must have a loss payable clause, which was to the satisfaction of Wells Fargo. In terms of the interpretation of these documents...
How many trucks were burned up?
Two, sir.
Two. Those in both the coverage for those two is what's at issue here?
Yes, sir. And the loss payable provision in both contracts of insurance, one issued by State Farm Fire and Casualty and one issued by State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company, are identical.
And who burned them up?
It's stipulated for the purposes of today that Miriam Trucking, through its agents and representatives, burned the trucks.
And that's the insured?
Yes, sir.
But the stipulation of fact doesn't say that. It says they were just burned. And later, and then y'all talk about it being stipulated too, they were burned by the insured, and the district court seemed to be under that impression too.
Yes,
I couldn't find that in the stipulation. That's what I'm getting at.
It was stipulated too for purposes of.
Was it stipulated at orally at some hearing or something?
Yes, it was stipulated prior in conjunction with the motion for judgment on the pleadings, and also stipulated too at the hearing before the Eastern District Court judge. There's no dispute about that today.
It's not in the stipulation of facts that it was burned by the insured. You stipulated orally at some hearing that it was burned by the insured.
That's correct, sir.
All right.
With regard to the interpretation of these documents, one of the things that is striking with regard to Virginia law is that you must give effect to all the terms and try to determine an unambiguous intent with regard to the terms used in the policy. And every part of the policy must be given effect. And I think that's important as we get to the issue of whether the term conversion, where it lies in the policy, and specifically the loss payable clause, is given its true meaning and import. And I think that was not
what you just said. You said try to understand an unambiguous intent. If it's unambiguous, what are you trying to understand?
In other words, you don't try to create an ambiguity. You give the terms, every term in the policy, their meaning. You read them together. And in Hill versus State Farm, the Virginia Supreme Court says you try to read them in such a way as to render them unambiguous. In other words, you don't try to create an ambiguity, which I think was done here. And I think that's important, that you try to read the terms together and give them their ordinary meaning to come to an unambiguous intent from the terms as used.
You think it's important because if a court should determine that things are ambiguous, it goes to the insured. You interpret it in
absolutely
favor of the insured.
And I would submit to the court that this loss payable clause is not ambiguous.
I understand that's what you're submitting. But that's why it's important.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. And I think specifically here it's important because this truly is a case of first impression, because the cases that are cited and relied upon, not only by the lower court but also by Wells Fargo, are cases where the loss payable clause is very different. And that's very significant, I think, in terms of how to interpret this clause that's before the court today.
What is the issue of first impression?
How to interpret whether or not the intentional destruction of a vehicle by the named insured is conversion on the loss payable clause that's currently before the court. because the court will see when in looking at the cases cited both by the Eastern District and by Wells Fargo, there's two very important distinctions. One, the loss payable clause is before the court in cases such as Foremost and Gibraltar have the terminology that no act or neglect by the insured shall invalidate the interest of the lien holder. That language does not appear here, and the courts that have looked at that have found that that can create an ambiguity when trying to reconcile that with the term conversion later on. Our loss payable clause doesn't include that language. Secondly, in determining what a conversion is,
does that arise from the so-called standard mortgage type interpretation, the fact that an act of the insured would not deprive a lien holder of the ability to receive insurance proceeds?
It does, but that's one of the things I wanted to address this morning is what I consider to be somewhat of a red herring in this case, because State Farm has never taken the position that this isn't a standard mortgage clause. There's a lot of discussion about that. We have always maintained that, yes, there's two different insurable interests under this policy. That's clear from the loss payable clause. You have the named insured, who is Merriam Trucking, who is subject to the terms and conditions of the policy. And then you have a separate endorsement, which is included in the appendix, and that's the loss payable clause. And that sets forth the rights and responsibilities of State Farm to the lien holder.
Well, there seems to be a lot of ink spilled in the papers if this has never been an issue.
Well, there is. There is. And that was one of the reasons that's on my first page of things to talk about today, is what are we really fighting over?
But that we shouldn't be, we should disregard all those pages in both parties' briefs.
Well,
it's just their brief.
No, I understand. And the reason I wanted to clarify that is this. The cases that are cited from Virginia by Wells Fargo include what's called a traditional standard mm-hmm. mortgage clause. Those clauses say that along the lines of no act of neglect of the insured shall impact the lien holder's interest, they provide a separate insurable interest in the lien holder, which happens here, but they also provide that no matter what the named insured does, we're still going to cover you. And we see in the Eastern District Court decision and in Wells Fargo's papers continual citation to standard mortgage provisions with no exceptions. Hastings case cited by Foremost and all have no exceptions to the standard mortgage clause. So we have the open mortgage clause, which says you stand in the shoes of your insured. We have the standard that says you recover no matter what. And then we have the clause before you. And that's why I say we're not arguing that this isn't standard. We're arguing it's standard with exceptions. And that's the rub of this case.
But
do those exceptions apply here?
Other position.
Excuse me?
It's just a standard. Is there something? In other words, is there an ambiguity here? Because if we get to that it's an ambiguity, then I take it that doesn't favor you. But what makes it unambiguous?
It's unambiguous because if you look at the loss payable clause and you see in the clause that it says we will provide, well, first of all, if I can just step back for just a moment to kind of walk into that. You have the definitions under the policy of insurance. Those definitions are incorporated into the loss payable clause by the opening paragraph, that the terms of the policy are applicable. That endorsement is an addition to that policy, if you will. So loss is defined as direct or accidental loss. Now, there's a lot of talk from the other jurisdictions about direct or accidental loss as to whom, but that's not ambiguous under Virginia law, because the Virginia Supreme Court has dealt with that on any number of occasions, and what they have said is direct or accidental loss as to the insured. So we have a standard insurance provision where we say direct or accidental loss as to Wells Fargo or direct or accidental loss as to the named insured. So we go to that second paragraph of the loss payable clause, and we see that it said that we will protect the interest of the loss payee. That's that security interest of Wells Fargo with regard to a loss, which is a direct or accidental loss, which by necessity and interpretation by the Virginia Supreme Court refers back to, in that paragraph, Wells Fargo. There's no dispute here that this is accidental from the point of Wells Fargo, but then you get to the exception.
I thought you stipulated it was intentional.
It's intentional as It is...
You stipulated it was intentionally burned. They intentionally burned the trucks.
Right, by Merriam Trucking.
Right. By Merriam Trucking.
And under a standard provision, you have in effect two different policies. So it is intentional as to Merriam Trucking, no coverage. But as to Wells Fargo, is it a loss as to them? Yes. But is there an exception that applies? The exception that applies says there's no coverage if there's conversion, secretion, or embezzlement by you. You is not defined as Wells Fargo. You, by definition in the policy, is defined as Merriam Trucking.
Yeah, but this separate, you set up two policies. This separate policy applies to Wells Fargo. That's the way you set it up when you were just explaining it to us. So you has to apply to Wells Fargo,
excuse
too.
Excuse me? I'm sorry, I missed the end of what
you
said.
You set it up as two policies, really. One for the insured and one for Wells Fargo. And you're talking about the Wells Fargo policy. And so in the Wells Fargo policy, the you refers to Wells Fargo.
No. Okay. Because there's not a separate definition section.
I know, but you were the one that told us, just, you know, if we had a court reporter to read things back just within the last 2 minutes, that there were two policies set up.
If I said two policies, I mean two separate insurable interests under the policy. So you have to address the insured separately. One is Merriam Trucking and one is Wells Fargo. The definitions under the policy, which are, when set forth, indicated in the terms such as the loss payable clause by quotations, refer back to the definitions in the underlying policy, that is, before the endorsement. Loss is defined as a direct or accidental loss, and you is defined in that policy as well, and that is with regard to the named insured of Merriam Trucking. So there's no change in definitions with regard to the endorsement. It's just in terms of what protections exist.
Well, what protection does Wells Fargo get then?
Wells Fargo has protection for all losses other than embezzlement, secretion, or conversion by its insured.
And you claim this is
by its mortgagee here, Merriam Trucking.
And you claim that this is a conversion by Merriam Trucking.
That's correct.
But to get there, you have to accept, even if from a textual perspective your argument is strong, as the district court found, but it went on to say that you still could look at this conversion clause to determine fairly, that is, it to either refer to a conversion of the insured vehicle or referring to a conversion of the lien holder's interest. And that's where the ambiguity comes in.
Well,
even if your textual argument is correct, but you cannot escape that conversion is what you are looking at. And to get the conversion, you then have to sort of definitionally figure out what you're talking about. And I guess that's where this ownership business coming in. How can you convert something if you own it?
That's true. And if we take the definition, well, just my response to in the Eastern District was, I think it's a distinction without a difference. But I think the Universal versus Kaplan case sets forth the issue very clearly. Is there conversion of property that has a security interest on it? The loss payable clause says we will protect the interest of Wells Fargo in the property. That's in the paragraph 2. So what the Universal case says is, if you exercise dominion over a property that diminishes or adversely affects the interest of a lien holder, a superior right of some other entity, even a third party, Virginia Supreme Court says, that is a conversion under Virginia law. That's consistent. So what we have here by destruction of the property is consistent with the civil definition of conversion, which is set forth in the Universal case, and our own statutory scheme in 18.2, I believe it's 115 of the Virginia code, where it says, yes it is, where it says disposal of property subject to a lien is a criminal conversion. So we have consistency in the terms of what is converted here, but clearly what has happened is an unlawful dominion over the property, which diminishes the rights of the security interest of Wells Fargo. If you read that to mean you can only convert your own property like the Foremost case did, you read the term completely out of the contract, because if you can't convert your own property, then what's that term in there for? How do you secrete your own property? By interpreting the words as done by the Foremost Court and adopted by the Eastern District Court judge, you render the terms meaningless, because there's no way that the insured could secrete from themselves, embezzle from themselves, or convert from themselves. So it has to go back to the interest of the lien holder.
I do wonder why it is you didn't simply write this policy to just not allow for arson to be covered. Doesn't sound like this is the first time this has come up in this country with State Farm.
Well, I'm not sure it's not the first time with State Farm, but a use of a broader term, I mean, vandalism, destruction, disposal, anything that would prevent exercise of dominion falls under conversion. So use of a term that would encapsulate more should not be rendered. Should not render the term
dominion over your own property. Conversion of your own property is something I don't think the Virginia law recognizes.
Which means you have to look at, are you converting a superior right or interest in the property, which is what the Virginia Supreme Court said was sufficient with regard to a lien holder's interest for conversion.
Thank you very much. Mr. Baird.
May it please the court. My name is Tim Baird, and I represent Wells Fargo in this appeal. I wanted to start, if I may, with Judge King's question related to the stipulation below, just to clarify that the stipulation below that the insured was responsible for intentionally burning the vehicles was solely for purposes of the motion. So in other words, it's not
King knew that.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify
The insured, when you say the insured, who are you talking about?
I'm talking about my client, who's insured as a loss payee under the loss payable.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
But she says there's two insureds.
No, right. That's right. The insured who.
Merriam Trucking is an insured.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm.
And Wells Fargo is an insured.
The parties here on this appeal stipulated below.
So you all stipulated that Merriam Trucking burned these things
for purposes of our motion for judgment on the pleadings in order to get a coverage ruling, because Wells Fargo's position, judges, it doesn't matter. Our position is, even if Merriam Trucking intentionally burned the trucks, we're covered. So why have a trial on an issue that
Merriam Trucking wasn't in on this, on the stipulation?
That's correct.
I mean, Merriam Trucking didn't come in and say, we criminally disposed of these. They didn't confess the crime.
That's correct. There's nothing in the record to indicate that.
This is a stipulation by the two parties here that got the money, State Farm and the bank. Right? And
that's
Merriam
correct.
Trucking took the trucks and burned them up, you all say, but Merriam Trucking hadn't agreed to that yet.
Correct.
They didn't get prosecuted for it.
That's also correct, Your Honor.
So it seemed to me like you're saying, even if they intentionally did it.
That's exactly what we're saying, Your Honor.
But you didn't say it that way. And you didn't stipulate that they intentionally burned them.
That's correct.
Not in the stipulation of facts. You all both say here you did, but the stipulation of facts does not say that.
We didn't stipulate.
It says they were destroyed by fire and are a total loss. That's paragraph 3 of the stipulation.
Right.
I've got it right in front of me here, page 221. You all somewhere along the line amended it, and the judge put in this order that, or his opinion that it had been agreed to, that
the stipulated that
Merriam Trucking intentionally burned the trucks. That's not in your stipulation of facts.
But for purposes this morning, both of you have agreed that you have, for purposes of this argument, stipulated that Merriam Trucking purposely burned the trucks, correct?
That's correct, Judge Motz. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
So why doesn't that make it just simply a request for an advisory opinion?
Well,
you talking yourself into a corner?
No, I think, Your Honor, the idea is that from our standpoint, it doesn't matter. So if we had a trial on this and it was proven that they intentionally burned the trucks, we'd be covered. It does. From our standpoint, we're covered regardless of whether.
Regardless of who burned the trucks.
Whether Merriam Trucking burned the trucks or not.
Someone had stolen trucks from them and destroyed them.
Well, we don't have those facts, Your Honor, but I'll be happy to address that in a moment.
But you'd say that would be covered too.
Well, you do have a written stipulation that the trucks were destroyed.
That's correct.
And yes. You're telling us that there is an oral, there's no dispute orally, that the insured did this intentionally.
That's correct, Judge.
no dispute between Wells Fargo and State Farm, and we don't know what Merriam Trucking, who's the proposed wrongdoer in all this, we don't know what they agreed to as to what whether they criminally destroyed these trucks.
That's correct, Your Honor. Under the standard mortgage clause that we have at issue, the lien holder is covered even where the owner intentionally burns the insured property that's the lien holder's collateral. That was the holding in the Virginia Supreme Court case in Wagner versus Peters 90 years ago. That case involved real property and a standard mortgage clause without an exclusion. The issue presented here is whether the result is the same where the insured collateral is a movable motor vehicle and where there's an exclusion in the loss payable clause for conversion, secretion, or embezzlement. Our position is that there's no coverage difference. Properly construed, Wells Fargo maintains that the term conversion as used in the exclusion cannot reasonably be construed to include intentional damage or destruction as argued by State Farm. Our position is that it means the insured's unlawful misappropriation of the vehicle. In a word, it means theft. This construction harmonizes the language of the policy, as I will explain in a moment. It's also consistent with the historical purpose of the standard mortgage clause, which is to cover the lien holder no matter what the insured does.
Do you accept that Virginia law, at least when you look at the Kaplan case, would recognize that a lien holder's interest could be the subject of a conversion?
I recognize, Judge Wynn, that it could be in the tort context. However, our argument is that the words as used in the policy have to be construed in the criminal context. And that's because the words that are used are conversion, secretion, or embezzlement. And they have specific meanings in Virginia law.
A little bit. I'm trying to understand that because if we're looking at interpretation, I know there's tort and there's other side, property or whatever, but this is a contract.
Correct.
And I'm looking at this as a contract.
Agreed.
The question I have is, does Virginia recognize it, even as you say, from a tort perspective? Why is it a criminal perspective?
Let me explain, Your Honor. I'd be happy to do that. If you look at the actual clause, Clause A of the endorsement states that the named loss payee, that's my client, and the insured are covered for any loss to a covered auto. In other words, we have the same coverage as the insured under the primary coverage. Clause B is the standard mortgage clause. It says the insurance covers the interest of the loss payee unless the loss results from conversion, secretion, or embezzlement on your part. We agree that means on the part of the primary insured, Merriam Trucking.
Now the other side, when you read those together, Clause A will cover the loss to a covered auto. Clause B then only states loss without the covered auto limitation. Therefore, as I understand the argument, they are suggesting that Clause B should be read broadly to encompass this lien.
Yeah, we disagree with that. We believe that that reading is incorrect. And the reason is...
Seems strong textually, though.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think if you read Clause B with Clause A, the word loss logically refers back to the phrase loss to a covered auto in Clause A. There was no need to repeat the full phrase, so they just said loss. In other words, if you read them together, Wells Fargo is covered for any loss to a covered auto, including losses excluded under the primary coverage, unless the loss results from conversion, embezzlement, or secretion. So in other words, you could have in the primary coverage an exclusion that would apply to Merriam Trucking, but it would not apply to my client. We would still be covered unless we're talking about conversion, embezzlement, or secretion. You note that the exclusionary language, as Judge Wynn noted earlier, doesn't say arson. It also doesn't say fire. It also doesn't say intentional destruction. None of the terms are defined. If you look at dictionary definitions, the non-legal...
What does that mean? That means you have an ambiguity, or because it's not said there?
Well, we think it can be construed to have a specific meaning that favors my client and reconciles not only the contract language, but the law. And we think that that meaning is theft by the insured. And how I get there is that if you look at a standard dictionary definition that's not legal, conversion means the act of changing something from one purpose, use, or function to another. We submit that intentional burning did not convert the trucks to a different purpose, use, or function. Before the fires, Merriam Trucking used the trucks in its hauling business. Nothing about the fires changed that. It just changed their condition.
But it did destroy the lien holder's interest.
Well, it depends on whether there's coverage, doesn't it? We would submit that, number one, the clause doesn't address conversion of the lien holder's interest. So that right there is the response. And number two, it kind of begs the question. The real question here that State Farm hasn't addressed, in our opinion, is why is the conversion clause there? We believe the conversion clause is there for a specific reason, and that is at the point where the insured no longer has a right to maintain possession of the vehicle and takes actions to remove possession from the lien holder that's trying to assume possession of the vehicle, either by converting it, which could be taking it to another state and using it for a different business or a different use, or somehow managing to sell it. Could mean secretion, which is concealment, means hiding it away from the lien holder, or embezzlement, which just means that it could, if it's entrusted to somebody else who does the same thing, that would fall within it. But all these things boil down to one thing: criminal larceny, theft. And if you look at the Virginia...
Burning of the trucks was a theft.
No, Your Honor, I disagree. Burning of the trucks is an arson. And I submit if you look at the criminal code in Virginia, at common law, larceny is the taking and carrying away of the goods and chattels of another with the intent to deprive the owner of possession thereof permanently. By statute in Virginia, we have a specific statute for the fraudulent conversion, disposition of, or concealment of liened property, as Ms. Boyce noted. In fact, that's the title of the offense in Virginia Code 18.2.115. There's also a statute for embezzlement, which is the wrongful or fraudulent use, disposal, or concealment of personal property. These are the words that are used in the policy. If you read them all together, I note that property concealment, which is the same thing as secretion, are criminal acts under both of those statutes. Moreover, both offenses in the statute state that they constitute larceny in Virginia.
Get me back to something.
Yes.
Conversion can be criminal, but can it also be arise from a tort?
Yeah, I think it's clear, Your Honor, from the case law that you could construe what does conversion mean in the criminal context and what does it mean in the tort context.
The criminal definition.
I'm maintaining that the use of the words in the contract have a specific meaning that is in the criminal context because of the words that surround conversion. It doesn't just say conversion. The words that follow immediately thereafter are secretion and embezzlement. So if you look, for example, at...
Because those terms are criminal.
Secretion is not necessarily criminal.
Well, by statute, the statutes I referenced, Your Honor, there's no difference between concealment of collateral and secretion of collateral. But secretion of property entrusted to a wrongdoer is a crime under the embezzlement statute.
But you could have secretion without a crime, I would think.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, but I thought in response to Judge Wynn, you were saying that because the surrounding language, those things are crimes, this must be a crime too. And it doesn't follow because there are surrounding language things that are talking about are not crimes. So I get your logic.
I think when you read them together, people don't usually bring a tort claim for embezzlement, for example. So embezzlement is generally known to have a specific criminal meaning.
We're talking about all of them, not just picking out embezzlement.
That's right, but the associated terms should be read in determining what conversion means.
That's one associated term, but another one is secretion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you've just conceded with me that it wouldn't necessarily need to be a crime.
It doesn't necessarily mean, but that is the construction that gives meaning to all of the terms of the contract. Let me move on, if I might.
Before you do,
yes.
Something I want to understand in terms of your position, because it seems as though you are taking the position that you have to establish that this is a criminal type and therefore get to the theft. Is that what you have to do, or you simply have to indicate that as a reasonable interpretation which creates an ambiguity? It could be a tort. Could be anything else.
But that's correct.
I'm hearing you to not go there. You're saying this is criminal because things around it is criminal and therefore it's a theft and that's all it can be.
No, our argument, Your Honor, is that that's the correct interpretation and we should prevail. State Farm argues that their interpretation is correct and they should prevail.
But do you need to have that as the correct interpretation?
No.
That's my question.
And the answer
why would you go there if that's not necessary? All you've got to do is establish there's an ambiguity.
That's
is that
correct.
Correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And we do maintain that at the end of the day, our construction is at least reasonable, and as the fact that it favors coverage must prevail. But the point that I'm getting at is that when you read everything together, our construction makes everything hang together. So, for example, it's clear that arson and fire are not conversion. Here's how I get there. Arson is a separate criminal offense in Virginia. In this context, under Virginia Code 18.281, it's starting a fire to damage or destroy personal property with the intent to defraud an insurance company. So it's not reasonable, we would argue, to argue that arson is conversion. Also, fire can't reasonably be construed as falling within conversion, where in the primary policy itself, State Farm actually excluded in the comprehensive coverage fire and lightning. So it actually took an act, it actually excluded in the primary coverage fire. So it knows how to say fire if it wants to exclude coverage, but it didn't do that in the loss payable clause. It also didn't say arson. So you can't construe those acts to fall within the conversion exclusion. Also, Your Honors, under State Farm's construction, the lien holder would be barred from recovery in any situation involving the intentional damage or destruction of the covered vehicle. This case just happened to involve fire. In evaluating their construction, consider the different coverage outcomes that would result, where the only real difference is whether the collateral is movable, as with a car, or immovable, as with a house. Let's start with this specific situation. An insured who intentionally, through arson, burns down the house or burns up the covered car. In Wagner versus Peters, the Virginia Supreme Court found coverage for the lien holder where the insured owner had intentionally burned down the insured's house. Under their argument here, the same conduct with regard to the car would not be covered. In all other material respects, these situations are the same. In both cases, the lender loaned money to an owner to finance the purchase of an asset. In both cases, the owner signed a promissory note in a security agreement, giving the lender a lien on the asset as collateral. In both cases, casualty insurance was obtained specifically to protect the lien holder's interest in the collateral, which in Wagner happened to be in a house, in our case, happens to be dump trucks. Yet under State Farm's construction, the same situation would result in coverage where the collateral is a house, but no coverage where the collateral is a car. But in our construction,
there was no exclusion in Wagner.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor, but in our construction, that result doesn't follow, because this is not theft. Take some other examples. Suppose the insured owner takes a wrecking ball and destroys the house. It would be covered. The lien holder would have coverage. If he takes a wrecking ball and flattens the car, no coverage. If the insured...
I don't know how you can change the fact that there was, if you put in that there's no exclusion, their whole case depends on the exclusion. So if you take that out of your hypothetical, I think you've severely changed the case. Maybe they would concede that you're right.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that in construing...
we don't disagree, do we, that their case rests on the exclusion?
No, that's correct, Your Honor. Their case rests on the exclusion.
So your hypothetical took the exclusion out. We don't disagree on that either.
I'm arguing that in construing what it means,
Wagner had no exclusion. Okay.
And that's because
you took the exclusion out, which is the thing upon which their case rests. It's not a helpful argument to make.
But that's because you can't move a house. I mean, the question is, why is the exclusion there, which is not something they've really addressed? Why is it there? It's there because you can move a car out of the reach of the lien holder. You can't move a house out of the reach of the lien holder. You also can't hide it, and you can't embezzlement. But you can with motor vehicles, motorhomes, trucks. Those things are subject to being removed from the reach of the creditor. That's the reason that the exclusion exists. But we don't have those facts here. There's no removal. There's arson, and arson is not excluded. And for that reason...
Why did y'all put that in the stipulation that it was arson?
We put it in the stipulation, Your Honor.
Why didn't you?
Why didn't we put in the...
Y'all keep telling me you stipulated all this stuff, and maybe you have agreed to it today, but the stipulation that you put in the file doesn't say it. Doesn't even say that the thing was burned by Miriam Trucking. It said it was destroyed by fire. Could have been destroyed by the lien holder. Then there wouldn't be any coverage, right?
Well, I think the answer, Your Honor, from a practical standpoint is...
Why didn't you amend the stipulation?
My client...
To get it right.
My client's position is it didn't make a difference either way.
Well, I understand. But it would make a difference.
But it would avoid a trial.
It says it was destroyed by fire. And if it was destroyed by fire and the lien holder was in on it, there would be no coverage. So that's an incomplete stipulation to help you.
I think in the briefs it's undisputed, Your
Honor. It is in the briefs.
That the lien
holder
is not responsible.
It is in the briefs. But you don't stipulate in briefs. You brief things that are in the record.
Thank you.
And the record is the record.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You both agree it was destroyed by fire by Merriam Trucking, which, of course, is not a party. It is not here.
If I might, Your Honors, case law, every published decision that has closely analyzed the meaning of the conversion exclusion in this specific context, meaning a lien holder's coverage of a vehicle intentionally destroyed by a fire set by the insured, has found coverage for the lien holder.
Every case from where?
Well, every case from other jurisdictions. There's no case in Virginia. Six appellate courts from six different jurisdictions have all reached the same conclusion. The coverage is afforded to the lien holder in these circumstances.
When there's an exclusion exactly identical to this one?
We would submit, yes, Judge.
And exactly identical, word for word?
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason we get there is that the only difference in the language, Your Honor, is in the initial coverage statement, which here doesn't say anything about regardless of any act or neglect of the insured. I see my time is up. May I finish your question, Your Honor? It's not in there because it's not necessary. The clause just says my client is covered for everything, no matter what, except conversion, exclusion, or embezzlement. And in that respect, there's no material difference from the clauses in the other cases, all of which found for the lien holder on the coverage issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you one last question on that. In all of those cases, was it the fact that those states recognize the standard mortgage clause as being the basis for their interpretation, whereas here there is some question as to whether that clause, in fact, would apply in this context, that type of interpretation?
I believe in all of those cases, Your Honor, they concluded that they were a standard mortgage clause. I don't believe State Farm is maintaining here that this is not a standard mortgage clause. They're maintaining that it's a... They're maintaining...
You asked me earlier, but I'll ask again.
Okay. I believe
this morning said she doesn't dispute that, but there certainly was a lot of discussion about it in the papers.
My understanding is that they are conceding it's a standard mortgage clause, but just one that contains limited exclusions.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Boyce?
Ms. Boyle, would you clarify that for me immediately as to whether you concede this is a standard mortgage clause, but it does not operate with the exclusion in this matter. Is that what you're saying, or something to that effect?
I'm not sure about the end of that statement. I called it a hybrid because we agree it's standard, meaning that there's two insurable interests, but we submit that the insurable interest of Wells Fargo is subject to these exceptions, secretion, embezzlement, and conversion by the insured.
But when I asked you in your initial argument, when you were saying that this was a standard insurance clause, you said, yes, we agree to that. Remember, and then I said to you, well, why did you write all this stuff about it? And then gave me whatever your answer was.
Right.
But you had expressly conceded, even though, as I say, there seems to be a lot of discussion about it in the papers, and I thought what you were saying was, yes, it's a standard clause, but we think this exclusion makes ARCs different. Is that right?
That is right. I'm sorry.
And it's the same type of standard mortgage clause that the other jurisdictions this is a different standard mortgage clause, or it's not?
What does standard mean then?
Okay, standard means, open means that you stand in the shoes of the insured. Standard means there's two insurable interests. So generally that means the lien holder recovers regardless of why the property is destroyed or lost. So that would be the Wagner's case. So that's a pure standard mortgage clause. There's no exceptions. Here, we have the standard mortgage clause in that we have two insurable interests, but there are limits on the lien holder's right. That's what makes it different. And how that is the same and different in the other jurisdictions is, Here we have a very simple clause. It does not say the lien holder gets to recover no matter what the acts or neglect of the insured is, and then go into a long clause with regard to when a conversion applies. This is very simple. You collect if it's a loss as to you, which it is, except where you have, in this case, conversion on the part of the insured. And Judge King, I don't know why we didn't change the written stipulation. I don't remember that, but we did on Appendix 179 is where it's found that in the oral argument we represented to the court that for the purposes of the motion, it was stipulated to that the insured was responsible for the fires that destroyed the two vehicles that were financed.
Was responsible for them. Okay. Now, but you said that they intentionally burned them. Is that the same as being responsible for the fires?
Yes.
Could you be accidentally responsible for a fire?
It was definitely stipulated that it was an intentional arson, and that was why.
Where's that say that?
We were arguing the arson.
Where does it say that? Doesn't say that on page 179. But maybe it says it somewhere else.
But you're saying that this morning, in any event.
Absolutely. That was always the agreement between the parties.
Well, it wasn't the agreement when you wrote the stipulation, because you didn't say so. You didn't even say
it was destroyed by fire.
You didn't even say that that Wells Fargo wasn't responsible for it. I mean, you don't exclude them. I mean, if they were in on it, they wouldn't be entitled to get paid then, would they? What if the trucks were underwater? It would be to the advantage of both the insured and the and the loss payee to burn them up, and then you wouldn't. But you just say they were destroyed by fire. That's what your stipulation says, and then you say, or he says, Mr. Baird says, what you quoted for me on 179. that's a statement by one lawyer. Anyway, go ahead.
With regard to the reason for the exclusion, that was something that was discussed. The Wells Fargo and the Eastern District Court relied upon the Foremost case. Foremost case said the reason for this exclusion is to prevent fraud. Wells Fargo says, well, it's a theft exclusion, and that's clear from the terms that are used. But what the And we should have used fire if we were trying to include arson, because fire is used elsewhere in the policy. But if you look at the same provisions that are cited by Wells Fargo where fire is used, the word theft is also used. We don't use theft here. And that's consistent with the reason for the development of these clauses is to protect the lien holder from fraudulent acts. The cases cited, both the Letho case that's cited by the Eastern District judge, says, again, it's a risk against fraud. Conversion, as developed over the last 100 years, has been to protect the lien holder from fraudulent acts such as disposal or concealment, deprivation of security, and those are based on the citations. Here we have an exercise of dominion that destroys or diminishes the security rights of the lien holder. We maintain, particularly under the Universal case, that is a conversion by the named insured, and that triggers the exclusion under the loss payee clause and precludes an award to the lien holder. Thank you. I'm over my time. I apologize.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll come down and greet the lawyers and then go directly to our next case.